D-Mace Vingan and Donick 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. We are live at Bridgestone Arena, opening night for the Nashville Predators, game number one of 82. Puck drop at 7 against the Columbus Blue Jackets, pregame starting at 6, of course, right here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, of course, calling the game for FanDuel Sports Network in his Thursday best. Oh, looking sharp, Willie
looking
D.
Looking like the prez.
Let's go.
Looking like the president.
Let's go.
Of the United States.
Opening night energy right here.
I do have a very important question for you. Can you tell me if my service provider has FanDuel Sports Network?
Okay. You're just ruining a pretty good mood right here. Don't ruin the mood.
Willie, how can we watch the game?
GetMyHomeTeams.com.
What is that website again?
GetMyHomeTeams, all one word, .com.
There we go, people.
Willie, why does YouTube TV not have the press?
David, enough. I had a couple people like, hey, Willie. No, we're not doing that today. We're not doing that.
You know, not today.
I felt good walking in the building, seeing some of the familiar faces walk in, everybody bopping around. You know, everybody is like the first day of school around here. It feels good, man. It feels great. The tech that was here, he did a great job, man.
Shout out to Andrew.
Absolutely. AJ, shout out to AJ.
So we will take you right up to the start of pregame at 6 o'clock, of course, right here on 102.5 The Game with Max Herz. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, will join us at 5 o'clock for his first interview of the season with us. Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us at 3:40 to preview the weekend ahead in college football. But since we are here at Bridgestone Arena for opening night, we are going to start today's show with the local professional hockey team. Nashville sports fans haven't had a whole lot to cheer about over the past few years. Yes, Nashville SC won the U.S. Open Cup. I am not going to venture down that road again.
Don't rain on that parade. Exactly. Don't open that can of worms.
I'm just going to state it plainly. Nashville SC did win the U.S. Open Cup recently. Vanderbilt football has been a fabulous story. It's easy to root for the Commodores, unless you're a Vols fan, I guess. But when it comes to the two biggest franchises in our city, the Tennessee Titans and the Nashville Predators, fans of those teams have had very little to get excited about. We know what happened with the Predators last season. So much excitement, so much buzz, not just here in Nashville, but around the NHL after the Predators won the offseason. And as soon as the season started, it was basically over. The Predators lost their first 5 games in regulation and never recovered. And the Predators, if you read all of the prognosticators ahead of the NHL season, most, if not all, of those prognosticators have the Predators finishing near the bottom of the NHL standings again. I mean, guys, it's been a long time since we watched the Predators win a playoff series. They haven't made the playoffs 2 of the past 3 years. But they haven't won a playoff series since 2018. 7 years since the Predators last won a playoff series. So here's how we are going to start today's program. I know that the Predators themselves, look at last season, flushed it down the toilet. They know they are a better team than what we saw last season. There is plenty of skepticism about that, including me. I have plenty of skepticism. I don't anticipate the Predators to be as bad as they were a year ago, but I'm not sure how much better they can get. But what the Predators think they can do is be a threat in the Western Conference to challenge for a playoff spot. So here is how we are going to start today's show. And I will, of course, turn it over to Willie Donick with this question. It's actually 2 questions. 1, can the Predators realistically get back into the playoff mix this season? And 2, what must happen to make that happen?
The answer is yes to the first, because they play in a league that is true parity. When you have everybody on a hard salary cap, there are two or three surprises every year. One of the surprises last year was the team that the Predators were playing tonight. Think about where the Columbus Blue Jackets were a year ago, where they had an unspeakable tragedy to maybe their most talented player. Nobody thought they would be higher than 30th in the league, and they had a great year. All things considered, they fell just short of the playoffs. And my point is not to drudge that back up, but that ended up being a very positive season for Columbus. And so I would say if you look at some Predator teams of the past, you could probably cite a few where I think there have been Predator teams with a lot less talent on paper that have made the playoffs in this league. I think Barry Trotz had a couple of them. I think Peter Laviolette going into his first year after they fired Barry Trotz, I don't think anybody had them doing much. They made the playoffs. In fact, they had the best record in the league after 60 games
until that season.
I'm not going to make any, you know, assumptions of connections.
I will just tell you that when I arrived in Nashville in March of 2015, things started to go sideways for the Predators. So maybe it was me. Who knows? Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, John Hines had a team a few years ago. Same thing. I don't think I could find one person that had them in the playoffs. They made the playoffs. So making the playoffs is I think, a realistic possible goal. Now, when you say threat to win rounds in the playoffs, I think that's where there's another level that this team would have to show that they can get to. Now when we get to B, your second part of the question, it's one word, defend. Everything that they do this year, I think, will start with defending better, allowing UC Saros to bring out the best in his game. I believe, and I will go out on a limb, I will die on this hill, UC Saros is an elite goaltender in this league if you give him half a chance. They didn't give him a chance last year. They admitted it themselves. You heard Andrew Burnett say it. You heard Barry Trotz say it on this station yesterday. So don't think it's just me saying this. This is the coach, the GM. That is what they believe happened last year as much as anything else. They did not defend well. Predictability, clear the porch, a lot of sayings that they're using. And I think that is the key to turning things around. Defensively, the offense will be there if they play better defense.
Before we get Derek's thoughts, let's go to our phone line driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in Jared in Spring Hill. Jared, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hi. Greetings, gentlemen. I appreciate the time. Mm-hmm. I'm a newer fan of the Preds, at least like especially trying to follow them more consistently. And so for my background in football and in other sports, there's like a clear identity for teams like, you know, Titans for a while were a play-action first team, that kind of thing. So what's like the Preds' hockey version of that and like something that we can kind of look forward to? Like, do they have identities or like philosophies and things like that? Again, I'm just trying to get some insight, like kind of like what to look for this coming up season.
Sure.
And, thanks for the tip on the myhometeam.com. It's been a chore. I like listening to it, but I like watching it more. So
there you
cheers,
go.
Brother. Yeah.
Thanks, Jared. Hey, what's that website again, Willie Donick?
GetMyHomeTeams.com.
Hey, you know what, Jared? We appreciate the fact that you're a newer hockey fan. Mm-hmm. We think our show is better positioned than any other show in this market to educate you on this sport. So to answer your question, I'm going to let Willie dive into the nuts and bolts. To answer your question generally, yes, hockey teams do have identities. Some hockey teams pride themselves on being rush teams scoring up and down the ice. Some teams pride themselves on being relentless forechecking teams, causing turnovers. Think about the Florida Panthers, who have won the past two Stanley Cup championships. They are a relentless forechecking team. They dump the puck in, and they beat you to the puck, and they beat you up trying to get to the puck, cause turnovers, and score that way.
Their identity is their physicality.
Yes. But, Willie, Jared's question, how would you describe this Predators team identity?
It's a great question because I think in any sport, mm-hmm. a good team can tell you what their identity is.
Yeah.
You show me a good team and you pick a sport, I don't care what sport it is, they'll tell you this is our identity, this is what we're about. And the reason it's a great question is this team lost their identity last year. They were not on the same page at the start of the year. There wasn't a good buy-in. There was a bad start. and they spent the whole rest of the year trying to figure it out, trying to recapture it, and they really never did. 2 years ago, the word you used the word relentless, they put it on hats. They put it on shirts.
Yes.
Because they were so good at it. Once they got it, they had a slow start that year. But the relentlessness was their identity 2 years ago. This year, I think they're going to try to have a different identity to try to match what they are now. It's a group of 30-somethings, mm-hmm. a lot of dads, a lot of guys who have won a lot of games, and they've got a lot of kids that are just trying to scratch the surface. It's blending those two groups, and there's a pretty good, you know, they used to call about the generation gap. It's not quite a generation, but there's a gap, right, between the nucleus of youngsters that hopefully are going to become the core of this team in the coming years and the core of this team now that are in their 30s. Blending those two together and playing to their strengths, which is a little bit more, I think, defending, maybe not as much relying on speed, but trying to use their best weapon, I think, which they believe is Juicy Saros, and then having guys like Roman Josi and Steven Stamkos get the offense where you can.
One texter says, it's nice to have optimism about a team coming off their worst year ever when basically nothing changes. Reminds me of the Titans about 6 weeks ago, but the Preds getting way more hype. I would disagree with that final part. I don't think the Predators are getting hyped at all. As I just said, if you go to any hockey website, go to ESPN.com, go to Sportsnet.ca, go to The Athletic, read the season previews. Every single one of them, and this is not hyperbole, every single one of them expects the Predators to miss the playoffs and more likely than not be back in the draft lottery next spring.
And I'm not here to tell you that they're wrong. I think that that absolutely can happen to this team. Mm-hmm. They could find themselves back in the lottery.
So the idea of them getting way more hype is incorrect.
No, they're not getting any hype around the league. You asked me, is there a pathway back to the playoffs? And I think there is.
I'm not sure.
You don't think there's any pathway?
I'm not saying there's no pathway.
Is there a pathway? You said, I'm not so sure. So clarify.
I am not going to completely disregard the idea that they can make the playoffs. But I think so much has to go right. And this is a point we made earlier, either this week or maybe last week. I can't recall all of the days with you guys run together because I love you so much. They missed the playoffs by 28 points last season. You look at some of their numbers, their shooting percentage and things like that, some of the lowest numbers in the salary cap era. They were incredibly unlucky. And I think they're going to be better than they were last season. But I'm not sure I see a path to them improving by as many points as I think it's going to take for them to make the playoffs. We can dive more into that, but that's my general opinion on the state of the team. Derek, I wanted to get
One thing you said I think is true.
Yes.
A lot has to go right. Mm-hmm. I think they know it in that locker room down there. I know it. But when you say, is there a path? Yes, there's a path. But I'm not the least bit surprised that Andrew Burnett is the number one coach on the hot seat and that nobody thinks the Predators are going to make the playoffs. I'm not the least bit surprised at that at all.
Let's say I think the path to the Predators making the playoffs is about the width of a tightrope. Like, I'm just not there. I am willing to be wrong, but I'm just not there. Derek, I do want to get your thoughts on something generally. You weren't on too many bad teams in your NFL career.
No.
What was the worst team you were on in your career?
Oh, man.
From a record standpoint.
It may have been my last season here. Mm.
So that's different, though, because you left. What I wanted to know is how it feels in a locker room.
Oh, what? I mean,
that kind of season.
Yeah, we've had, like, seasons where we went to the playoffs, and then because of injury, we were struggling, and we found ourselves out of the playoffs. And, you know, that, depending on how it all happened, that offseason is important because, one, if it happened because of injury, then you want to make sure you get those guys back 100% before camp starts because these are the guys that you depended on at the beginning of the season last year and they were injured. So that causes your season, if you don't have enough good backups, that causes your season to be derailed. Now, in that situation, we had frontline guys go down and backup guys go down. So it's hard to you know, when that happens. But then the next following season, you know, you can identify, okay, it happened because of this. So now we are better at that, so we should be better, because the prior year to us being bad, we were a good team and nothing really changed other than the injuries. But you asked the question, can the Predators do it, the likelihood of them doing it? I believe that this team was a classic underachieving team last year. The classic underachieving team. Everybody saw high hopes in this team at the beginning of the year and everything else, and then all of a sudden they come and it's just a flat season. Typically what happens the next following season is the bounce back season. These guys, if you look at all of their careers, this is probably the worst they played. The year prior probably was the best they played. So I think you're going to get somewhere in the middle. They are like the Titans, but maybe in a better situation because they have more top-end players. When you have a bunch of top-end players, well, some top-end players, but then your bottom of your roster is young, those top-end players must hold their own majority of the time, because if they don't, what happens is now these guys that are third-line guys or young guys, they got to pick up the slack. Like the Titans, it doesn't work. So in order for them to have a better season, those guys that they tasked to play well, they need to play well. Barring injury, they need to play well. And obviously that helps UC Soros.
Let's quickly go to Ricky on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ricky, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. I think it's funny that Derek Mason, the non-hockey guy, just stole a whole bunch of my points. Where I'm going to go was real quick. I did a show last night on my podcast, and there was a talk that 13% was the magic number that the free agent signings last year were down from their career totals. That's an anomaly. That's not going to happen to guys like Stamkos and Shea 2 years in a row. Also, I was speaking to an ex-player last night, and one of the great points he made was, it takes a while to get accustomed to a new city. Your driving route to the arena is different. Your pregame meals where you go to eat is different. Just sleeping in a different city sometimes throws guys off. It was an adaption year. I think the Preds bounce back, and not only do I say they make the playoffs, I think they're going to be very competitive this year.
Thank you for the call, Ricky. I appreciate your optimism. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate on our text line hits on something that I want to discuss next. Nate writes, quote, "The Preds' words that come out of their mouths don't mean anything to me anymore because they say one thing and do the complete opposite. We will see what they actually do this season instead of listening to, we want to play the young kids and go sign older players when they think they can just squeak into the playoffs and see what happens going back to 2017. There is something he said in there that I do want to discuss, because I think that this thing is the most important thing that the Predators must discover this season. We will get to that next. 615-737-1025. Call us, text us, 615-737-1025. If you are looking for a good spot to watch NFL games on Sunday, then you should come to Twin Peaks in Cool Springs, home of the 29-degree beer, and join 1025 The Game for the pregame show before the Titans take on the Raiders, featuring me. I will be sitting with Chris Sanders. We will put our blood feud aside on silly underdog picks, and we will host the pregame show together at the Twin Peaks in Cool Springs. Pregame show is brought to you. I know. The pregame show is brought to you by Circa Sportsbook Kentucky and Tennessee Brew Works.
We've got a lot of really talented young players, and I know you like your football like we all do. We have a lot of guys in the red zone right now in our organization with young players. Now, being in the red zone, you know how that works. You're either, you're stalled out, you're taking a field goal, or you're getting a touchdown and you're pushing it through. So that's where all these guys are. They're all in the red zone, in which, a little bit of luck, a lot of work, and some confidence and some good team play. Yeah, some guys are going to get to the next level here, and that's what we're looking for.
That was Predators GM Barry Trotz on our program on Tuesday. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate right now at baxhomeworks.com. I liked that analogy from Barry Trotz. The Predators have a lot of young guys in the red zone. Based on the expected lineup for the Predators tonight against the Columbus Blue Jackets, Nashville will have seven players in that lineup aged 25 and under. Spencer Stastny, Adam Willsby, Justin Barron, Ozzie Weisblatt, Fedor Svechkov, Joachim Kemmel, and, of course, Brady Martin, the 18-year-old, who will be the second youngest player in Predators history at the time of his debut, trailing only Scott Hartnell. Alex Daugherty of the Tennessean pointed out that Nashville's opening night roster has four rookies on it. That's the most the Predators have had on an opening night since 2003-2004, when Dan Hamhuis, Jordan Tutu, Marat Zidlicky, and Wade Brookbank debuted. To me, what Barry Trotz was talking about there, the young guys in the red zone, to me that is the most important thing of all this Predator season. How many of those young guys can cross that so-called goal line? The Predators desperately, desperately need young difference makers. Brady Martin is going to get an opportunity tonight to center the number one line with Philip Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly. Predators fans hope that Brady Martin can hold down that position for years to come. But to me, Willie, before we get back to your calls at 615-737-1025, what Barry Trotz said there, how many of those young guys can cross the goal line? That, to me, is more important than anything else this season.
I don't know how many will cross the goal line this year. It would be nice. But I think if they got inside the 10, they got first and goal.
That's fair.
That would be good. I think the key is, how many cross? They're not all going to cross the goal line.
Correct.
They have, for example, 11 first-round picks. This was Barry Trotz the other night on our show. They have 11 first-round picks in the system right now. Some of them are here. More of them are in Milwaukee. And a handful of them are either playing in juniors, playing college hockey, or playing somewhere in Europe. They're not all going to become stars. The key is when you flood the system with guys, and they're all between, say, 18 and 21, the key is, where are they in about 3 years? Are they now the nucleus that are going to pick up the slack for maybe a Roman Josi who's in the last year of his contract at that point, for example, or Philip Forsberg, who might be more of the, in the back nine, the aging veteran, the post-Marchessault Stamkos? That is the vision of Barry Trotz. So we'll see if they roll out of playoff contention. I think you'll see them roll more to playing all of the kids. I think there'll be a balance. But what Barry Trotz stressed is there's flexibility on the roster. There's not a lot of people blocking kids from getting an opportunity, right? So you mentioned the number of guys that are
25 and under.
25 and under. Luke Evangelista will add to that list once he gets his visa. I don't know all the things. He's not eligible right now. He'll be back in there. There's another guy who's still 23, but he's already had a couple years in the league. So there's a lot. It'll be different numbers during different times of the year, but the key is, over the next 2 or 3 years, what does that group do?
Here's what I don't need, Derek. I don't need any Diego Pavia-like red zone turnovers
when it comes to these young players.
Well, there's going to be a couple. Of course.
But I look at it from this standpoint. When you're talking about the red zone, it's about it's the how and the who. The how is, how do we get these young guys? Because you talk about Brady Martin. He's going to be with the first line.
Yep.
You got to look at him as, say, your quarterback. How do we protect him and get him to be the best in the front line? Because if we don't protect him, and if we just let him and say, go out there and be who you are, we're not going to try to – this the big leagues now. We taught you. You figure it out. It's not going to work for him. It's going to be too much. How does that first line protect him? How does the coach protect him? Okay, so that's the how. How do we protect our young people? You know, because, yes, we want them to help, but we don't want them to have to lead the team when you got a bunch of veteran guys that are capable of leading it. Because I think if they have to lead, you're going to see more guys that fall off that you see stand up for the fight. So it's the how, and then it's the who, okay? We did this. Now, who's going to step up?
Yep.
Which one of you young guys are going to step up? Because we did all the things that we needed to do. And like you said, this is not going to be a once, like they're going to do it this season. This is going to be a process. for the next three seasons. And the third season may be when they enter into the end zone. And that may culminate into a, I don't know, a championship. But the process is for the next 2 to 3 years, we gotta figure out a way to protect these young guys. And then while protecting them and them progressing, who's going to step up once that happens?
Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Dylan and Antioch. Dylan, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, as a national sports fan, first off, I am just overjoyed hockey season is here. So I am stoked for tonight. But, yeah, about Brady Martin, I was there at the draft party that night, and the vibe in the building when he got drafted was sort of unexpected, kind of like a, well, you know, wait and see. And I don't think anybody, if you gave him true serum, would have expected him to make the opening night roster. It was like, well, we drafted Brady Martin. Now let's, you know, let him marinate in Milwaukee for a couple of years. But I'm excited for Brady Martin. And I just wanted to ask you guys, what do you think, what are some reasonable expectations? What are some traits? What should we watch for as fans tonight with him? And I just wanted to hang up and listen, guys. Hey, go Preds.
Thanks, Dylan. Before Willie, I want you to get to that. As I said, Brady Martin is going to be the second youngest player in Predators history on the day of his NHL debut. Only Scott Hartnell, roughly 25 years ago, was younger than Martin when Hartnell played his first NHL game. Martin was one of five players in the 2025 NHL draft class to crack a season-opening roster. So think about all of the players who were drafted in June. Martin is one of five to be on a season-opening roster. So I agree with Dylan. I wasn't sure Brady Martin was going to make the team at the start of training camp, but Willie, we've heard Andrew Burnett rave about him. We've heard Barry Trotz rave about him. We've heard his teammates rave about him. But to answer Dylan's question, what should Predators fans who are going to be watching Brady Martin for the first time ever tonight, what should they be looking for? What can they expect?
I am going to temper expectations on Brady Martin just for this reason. I think his the fact that he has made it to this point says a lot about his grand picture. Just remember, he is a college freshman age. He's about, 6 years younger than Diego Pavia, just for perspective there. He's 18. How old is Diego Pavia? 24?
Diego Pavia is 24.
Okay, so 6 years younger than Diego Pavia, who's playing college, okay? So Brady Martin, remember the unique thing about his situation. You can't send him to Milwaukee. The caller just said send him to Milwaukee for a couple years. Cannot do that this year. In fact, I don't know what the deal is next year. Like, you've got to be 20, right, to be able to go to Milwaukee, I think.
As of
right?
now, yes. As of now, players drafted out of the Canadian Hockey League, which encompasses three junior leagues,
yeah.
Players under the age of 20, if I'm not mistaken, are ineligible to report to the American Hockey League. So
junior hockey in Canada is basically high school, right? It's high school age. Now, it's the best high school. Imagine the best high school players in basketball across the country or in football across the country, all playing in the same league across the country. It'd be a pretty good league. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, it's high school age, right? Those guys are going to prom. Mm-hmm. He's eligible to play in that league next year. So he is really young. So that being said, he's passed all the tests. He's done a really good job. They want to keep him around because it's going to be hard for him to develop against high schoolers this year. But unfortunately, they got to send him there. There's nowhere else to send him. So that's part of the reason he's here. But the other reason is he's in the lineup tonight playing on the first line is he's absolutely earned that spot by passing all the tests. But let's not put the Connor Bedard, Connor McDavid kind of label on him yet. I think he's going to be a really, really good player in this league someday. We'll see what he can do in the 8 or 9 games they have him here.
Starting next season, NHL teams will be allowed to place one 19-year-old CHL player in the AHL.
Okay.
So it sounds like Brady Martin will be eligible for Milwaukee next
year. That's good.
But if he gets sent back to his junior team later this month, early next month, he's gone until that season is over.
Yeah. So in theory, he could come back after that season is over if they were still playing at that point. But that's way down the road. So it's a unique situation.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your thoughts on the Nashville Predators, who open the season tonight at 7 against the Columbus Blue Jackets. You can hear that game, of course, right here on 102.5 The Game. But coming up next, Mitch Light of The Athletic will join us to preview the weekend ahead in college football. Mitch Light coming up next, 615-737-1025. This Sunday, the NFL game of the week is the Dallas Cowboys versus the Carolina Panthers at noon on Sports Talk 830. The NFL game of the week is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and Macero in 12 South. Our show will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday prior to Monday Night Football. Head up there and watch the Monday night games as the Bills take on the Falcons and the Bears face the Commanders. Billy Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Please be joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by our friend Mitch Light of The Athletic to help us preview the weekend ahead in college football. Mitch, the Texas Longhorns coming off of a loss to Florida. It is the, I'm going to make sure I don't twist my tongue saying this, the Red River Rivalry this weekend, Oklahoma at Texas. Of course, Arch Manning in the spotlight. What do Arch Manning's struggles this season tell us about him as a player? And is it too soon to label Arch Manning as overhyped?
To the second part, I don't think it's too soon to label him as overhyped. I think it's too soon to label, to say his career, he will not be a successful college quarterback. It's a very nuanced question. He's not a true freshman. I mean, we need to keep that in mind. He's not a redshirt freshman. He's in his third year. He has played some. So that's what makes his struggles even more surprising. It's kind of put up or shut up time for him. He's had opportunities. He played well against Sam Houston, like after not playing well against UTEP. Wasn't awful against Florida. He wasn't their only problem, but he didn't play great in that game. I forgot the first part of your question.
What do his struggles this season tell us about him as a player?
Yeah, it's just that's kind of goes back to my being in the third year. So, I mean, everyone knows. I mean, the guy has talent. He understands the game. He's been around the game. So I don't really know how to answer that question, I guess, until we see more of him. It's not like he's a guy, like I said, that hasn't played much. You know, some will point to the level of competition at a private school, at the Newman School in New Orleans. He's not a guy that went to a lot of summer camps. He didn't go to the Elite 11 and compete against some of the other quarterbacks. That's what also made him maybe not a tough evaluation, but maybe some people didn't see some warts in his game there. So it's good. If he ends up having a good second half or plays great next year, we're going to look back in this and say, remember when everyone called Arch Manning a bust? Ha, ha, ha. But, you know, right now the criticism is fair. He has not performed up to – I don't want to say his ability, because we still think he's a talented guy, and it's a major storyline this year. It's why Texas, a preseason number one team, is struggling.
Mitch, I'm going to create an award right now. It's the award for the most unconvincing statement ever released by a college football program, and the winner is the University of North Carolina for the statements that Bill Belichick and Bubba Cunningham put out yesterday. Quote from Belichick, "I'm fully committed to UNC football and the program we're building here," end quote. From Bubba Cunningham, the AD, "Coach Belichick has the full support of the Department of Athletics and University." There were a lot of reports, or one report in particular, I think, yesterday, about how things are going south in a hurry in Chapel Hill. How does this entire fiasco play out?
Great question. And for your award, by the way, there are a lot of good candidates, because there's a lot of stuff that comes out of college coaches' mouth that's you-know-what and not genuine. At press conferences and press releases and all that stuff. Part of me thinks that Bill Belichick at some point in North Carolina is going to find a reason to cut bait after this year and just say this isn't working. Now, will he do that? Will he sacrifice the money? Will his pride? I mean, his legacy, you could say it's already tarnished, but if this season is a spectacular failure, 2-10, they go winless in the league or whatever, and he basically gets fired, you know, Does he care about it? I think he cares about his legacy. He's, you know, recognized as one of the greatest coaches of all time. So I'm struggling to figure out how this thing is going to end. They are so bad. Their evaluations in the portal weren't good. The kind of the arrogance of that staff that they thought they could just coach them up, it's proving to be false. My guess is he's not the coach at North Carolina next year, but that would be another amazing offseason storyline.
We'll talk with Mitch Light of The Athletic discussing college football. Now, Mitch, is Ty Simpson, because at the beginning of the season, we heard about a lot of these quarterbacks and a bunch of them, starting with Manning and Nussmeier, guys like that, that were at the top of the Heisman watch. But these guys haven't performed well. But then you look at Ty Simpson, yes, they lose the first game. But ever since then, he's become, at least to me, one of the most consistent and best quarterbacks on the best team. Do you consider him the best quarterback in the country right now?
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic in the Vanderbilt game. Just the way he operated that offense. He's mobile enough. You know, he's not, you wouldn't call him a runner. Although, as Sean McDonough did mention, coming out of high school, he was considered a dual threat. He's mobile enough to escape the pocket and pick up the yards. He just keeps his head upfield all the time. Seems to make the right reads. He did throw that one interception, but that's his only pick of the year. So, you know, he's throwing to very good wide receivers and a good tight end. So he's got a good supporting cast there. There are some guys playing very, very well. We'll see two in the Indiana and Oregon game. But right now, if you told me to pick a quarterback for my team the rest of the season, I think I'd pick Ty Simpson. I've just been really impressed with him.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. So, Mitch, let's take the Alabama evaluation a bit further. With Simpson appearing to make a jump, where do you see them in the national picture / top of the SEC picture?
I think they're really, really good, but I think that there's so many teams in the SEC that can beat each other. Like, they go to Missouri this week, a very good team. You know, Missouri's interesting because they have not played a road game yet. This is their sixth straight home game to start the season. I think a key to Alabama is Jam Miller returning. He is, you know, the other running back, Haynes, transferred to Michigan. Miller misses the first few games. I thought he was very good against Vanderbilt. He adds a dimension to the running attack that they did not have earlier in the year. So I think Alabama is very good, but I just think it's one of those years where there's no elite team. So we fall in love with a team based on a performance, based on Alabama winning at Georgia, then beating Vanderbilt. They could very easily go lose to Missouri. So, Texas A&M is a similar team that looks really good. Everyone's excited about them. But I don't think anyone is good enough to sit here and say, yes, they are the best team in the country. I know you've got to rank teams and you do power rankings, and I get all the people that right now who think Alabama is the team to beat. I just don't know if they're good enough to kind of navigate the season without a couple of losses.
What are you hearing on John? Is it John Mateer, the quarterback for Oklahoma? What are you hearing about his hand? And I know, like, it just seems to me it's a stretch that a guy could repair a broken thumb area or hand area so quickly and be effective anytime, like, they're talking. But tell me what you're hearing there.
Well, just, I mean, no great insight just hearing, you know, what's been said. He was listed as questionable, which was interesting because Brent Venables at his Monday or Tuesday press conference said, I think he basically said, yeah, he's back at practice, but he's not really doing, he called it good on good. He's not doing anything good on good. Obviously he's not getting hit. He wouldn't get hit anyways, the quarterback. But I'm with you. I think it's one of those situations where they're going to list him as questionable. They'll probably list him as a game time decision. We'll turn on the game. He'll be in uniform, and then he won't start. That's my guess there. I'd be very surprised. And not that they are in position to, like, just, you know, college football, there's so few games you can't just, oh, take a loss, it's okay. But they're undefeated right now. It's not like this is a have-to-have-it game. So I would doubt they would risk him in this game.
As you watch Georgia week to week, in the same vein as what we just talked about with Alabama, they haven't wowed anybody the way they've played. Now they've got a tricky game at Auburn, a rival. The line is only 3.5, even though Auburn is unranked. Where do you think Georgia is in trying to keep the standard that they've set for themselves?
Yeah, I don't think they're there right now. They're just kind of in that upper echelon group there. Obviously, you know, we saw they had opportunities to win the Alabama game. They took care of business against Kentucky, which right now, if you get up to say Kentucky's the worst team in the league. The defense just does not absolutely scare you like it did in recent years. You know, they gave up 371 passing yards to Tennessee. They gave up 280 to Alabama, a lot of that in the second half there. So it's going to be interesting because Auburn has struggled offensively. I believe the other two conference games were on the road at Oklahoma and at Texas A&M. On paper, you know, two of the three best teams in the league. So maybe that explains why the spread is so low there. Jackson Arnold really has not played very well at quarterback, the transfer from Oklahoma. The offense has struggled, but this is just kind of one of those games that I just have a feeling, you know, that Auburn's going to find a way. I might pick them for the upset there, just have not been overly impressed by Jordan.
We haven't talked to you since the Vanderbilt-Alabama game. You've got a unique perspective on Vanderbilt. What was the biggest thing you learned from that game in terms of where they're going?
It's probably what you guys have been talking about all week, that they were legit. They belonged on the field with Alabama. You did not watch them and think they had to play a perfect game to win, and they clearly did not play a perfect game. I thought they matched up well the line of scrimmage. They wore down in the third, fourth quarter. They were on the field too much. You know, Alabama controlled the ball. They just, you know, I put it in this way a lot. Like sometimes if you say, you know, Vanderbilt and Alabama, if they played 10 times, Vanderbilt would have to catch all the breaks to win one time. Like, I don't feel like the scenario there. I think they could play at Alabama 10 times and win three times or maybe four times. If they play them again, you know, again, like I just said, I think they could they match up very well with them. But it's very difficult to go on the road in any team you play to turn the ball over two times in the red zone. And we've been praising Diego Pavia for his decision-making all season long, and he made a poor decision. It's easy for me to say that. He thought he had Eli Stowers open for probably what would have been a touchdown, but it was an interception that, you know, that kind of changed the game there. I don't really blame him on the fumble. I thought it was a great defensive play there. So I think Vanderbilt walks away from that game thinking more than ever that they can compete this year with any team in the league.
All right, D. Mace picked Arkansas in his silly underdog pick. Is he crazy?
Well, that's independent of this game, but yes. you know what? When I first looked at it, I thought I saw somewhere where the spread was 7.5. I was like, no, that cannot be the case. But it's not. It's like 12.5 there.
Last I checked, it was 12.5. Yeah,
it's actually 11.5 that I'm looking at now. So it's come down slightly.
Oh.
Okay, the thing that's intriguing about this, it's like the first game under their interim staff. Now, obviously, like Bobby
DeMace has cited that. In fact, we've called for Bobby Petrino.
I like your word, intrigued.
Yes, we've called for Bobby Petrino to ride in on a motorcycle.
And wear the neck brace.
Yes, so I would feel better about the uncertainty if the offensive coordinator were new, but Bobby Petrino was calling plays before. Now, they got a new interim defensive coordinator, Chris Wilson, who was the assistant defensive line coach. So I'm sure they'll be doing some things different defensively, maybe that Tennessee hasn't seen on film. The problem is Arkansas's personnel on defense just isn't very good. I mean, they, you know, gave up 41 to Ole Miss, 32 to Memphis, 56 to Notre Dame. They're last in the league in total defense, second to last in passing defense. So I admire the pick. I realize you got to pick an underdog and the underdog picks, but I do not see this one coming through.
They just got to score one more point than the opposition. That's all.
Brilliant. Brilliant analysis.
Mitch Light of The Athletic has been our guest on D. Mace, Vingan, and Donicky. He joins us every Thursday. Mitch, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
You sure you don't want my hockey analysis for tonight, Adam? Or are you guys good? You probably have to go to break, right?
We've got a few seconds.
Oh, wait, that's my other line ringing. I better go.
All you had to do, it was teed up for you. Just say, exactly. Score one more goal than the opposition.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Willie. You know what, Willie? The goal tonight is to score one more goal than the opposition.
Boom.
There you go.
That's going to be our
expert hockey analysis by Mitch Light. Mitch, thank you very much.
All right, take care, guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025. Willie said something the other day as we were discussing the Tennessee Titans that I want to unpack, because I think it's an interesting, I don't know if dilemma is the right word, but it's interesting nonetheless. And we will do that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Saturday's college football game of the week is South Carolina versus number 11 LSU, Vanderbilt's next opponent, by the way, at 6:45 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants and Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. Coverage is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com.